Thank you, Chief Judge. May it please the court, Judge Colleton, Judge Strass. My name is Andrew Schlafly, representing myself here. I'm a member of the bar of the court. I'm speaking here on behalf of appellant myself. And this is a long-running issue of a takeover attempt of a membership organization founded by my mother, Phyllis Schlafly. She built it for 41 years. It got into the spring of 2016. The context was she then endorsed Donald Trump. There were some people on the board who were very unhappy about that. They proceeded to attempt to take over the organization. I've attached my original petition, a letter from Phyllis Schlafly asking those board members to resign. That's Appendix 28A. They refused to resign, and they proceeded to try to take over and revamp the leadership of the organization. But it's a membership organization, a membership corporation, and that's a special type of entity under Illinois law. Both sides agree that Illinois law applies here. And when it's a membership corporation, there are different provisions in the statute which apply. The bylaws have to be taken very seriously. And standard takeover tactics of redoing the board, changing the bylaws, don't necessarily work when the membership opposes what's being done by the board. And that's the case here. And it's in my verified petition that the membership was overwhelmingly opposed to what these few individuals on the board were doing in taking over the organization. The procedural posture here on appeal is that the trial court dismissed my complaint for failure to state a claim. So on appeal, the record is my verified petition. I call it a petition because it was originally filed in state court and it was removed to federal court. And that's the record on appeal. The other side has tried to put into the case, they have a supplemental appendix, a lot of things that are just not in my petition. This is on a motion to dismiss that was granted by the court below, and so we're on appeal, and it's that petition that is on appeal. And the central issue is whether it was proper for these directors to call a special board meeting, not give notice of their intent to change the bylaws, and then remove myself and several other directors who were loyal to Phyllis Schlafly, remove us from the board while prohibiting proxy voting. And so in their notice, they say no proxy voting will be allowed. Well, there's a provision of the Illinois statute that says if it's a membership corporation, then you have to allow proxy voting. There has to be a two-thirds vote. It's a higher threshold to remove directors. They didn't do that. So that's the central issue on appeal. Also, how they changed the bylaws at that meeting without providing notice. They removed Robert's Rules of Order from the bylaws, which was completely improper. I mean, you have to have a parliamentary system backing up your bylaws so that membership has some way to have rights to exercise their rights. Well, they just took it out of the bylaws completely. They did another change as well that disenfranchised membership, so I'm objecting to that as well. And I feel I did state a cause of action. I feel it was legal error for the trial court to dismiss.
Now, were you representative of all the members, or were you acting as an individual member to assert rights?
That's an excellent question, Chief Judge. And I was representative of all the members. In the caption here, Appendix 17A, it writes, Andrew Schlafly, in his official capacity as both a director and member of Eagle Forum. It wasn't a class action, but right in my caption, I'm suing both as a director and as a member of the organization.
But then you can only be representing your particular interest as a specific member, not
That's right.
the interests right. of other members.
That's right, Chief Judge. I'd like to mention the attorney's fees issue here and then leave a little time for rebuttal. The timing below was such that I filed a motion to remand the case back to state court because that's where the case was originally filed, and I thought it belonged in state court. That jurisdictional issue was not decided for much of 2017. Then in September, the first week in September 2017, the trial judge denied my motion to remand, said that there is federal jurisdiction, denied Eagle Forum's motion to dismiss. He said, I'm taking the case. He expressly granted me leave to file for a preliminary injunction. The annual meeting was coming up a week later when Eagle Forum was going to revamp the board again and make all sorts of additional changes. So I had a week there. So rather than waive my rights, I immediately filed for injunctive relief to enjoin the annual meeting with respect to these issues. And in a complete surprise to me, the trial judge, sua sponte, awarded attorney's fees against me for bringing that motion. And I have no problem with attorney's fees where it's appropriate, and I'm not claiming I'm perfect or anything, but I thought this over ever since, and I just don't see any other way to do that. The meeting's coming up. The judge just accepted jurisdiction to assert my rights. He gave me leave to move for preliminary injunction. To assert my rights, I had to file a motion in that window of time, and yet sua sponte awarded attorney's fees against me, and then he imposed the attorney's fees without an affidavit by the other side and so on. To the trial judge's credit, at that time, it wasn't really clear how this was going to shake out. Later, the Madison County Trial Court ruled in my favor and held that that initial takeover meeting by these directors in 2016 was invalid, and all actions at it are void. So,
did you include the attorney's fee in your notice of appeal, raising
yes.
that?
I certainly intended to. Chief Judge, I was very careful about that. Now, where would that be in the appendix here? Let's see. Notice of Appeal 218. So I list all these docket numbers and the attorney's fees. One, now which one would that have been?
63, I think.
63.
Or at least that's the order in the addendum, document number 63.
Number 63. It may have been because the attorney's fees was on that prior appeal that, Your Honor, you sat on that interlocutory appeal. And probably because that was pending, I did not list it here. So, Chief Judge, you may feel deja vu here. I argued before you in St. Louis, and that appeal was still pending. So that's probably why I didn't specifically list 63 here, but I certainly intended to appeal that. And the ruling in that case did reserve ruling on the attorney's fees issue, so hopefully that would protect me as well. Because in the per curiam decision, by Your Honor, here on page 3, it says that it's without prejudice to the reviewing the attorney's fees issue. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Shaffer. Mr. Bousquet.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. As Mr. Schlafly pointed out, this is a diversity case where Illinois law applies. The Illinois General Not-for-Profit Corporation Act governs Eagle Forum as a C4 nonprofit. That statute is at 805 ILCS 105. All of the statutory references in our brief and in my presentation today will refer to that chapter. I did want to point out, Mr. Schlafly points out repeatedly Delaware law and Delaware chancery decisions in his brief, but those are not particularly helpful because Delaware doesn't have any not-for-profit corporation law. Illinois, by contrast, has a comprehensive statute governing all aspects of nonprofit corporate governance. And the Act sets forth certain requirements for nonprofit corporations and treats members of a nonprofit very differently from directors. Now, Mr. Schlafly has referred to Eagle Forum as a membership corporation. While it's true that the corporation did have members, the bylaws are very clear that they have very little involvement in the governance of Eagle Forum. In fact, the bylaws specifically state that all powers of the organization shall be exercised by the board of directors. The only power that the members have, or at least had under the bylaws in effect in January of 2017, is to elect a single at-large director from three nominees selected by the board. So turning to this proxy argument of which Mr. Schlafly complains, just initially, Illinois law is fairly clear that different sections of the same statute should be viewed as a whole and interpreted to give them harmonious effect. That's the People versus McCarty case from the Illinois Supreme Court. Mr. Schlafly wants to argue that Section 108.35(c)(1) requires the corporation to allow proxy voting by members and directors. That's not what it says. Looking at 805 ILCS, the section is 108.35, there are two potentially applicable provisions. The first one is subsection B, that's cited in our brief. That states that in the case of a corporation with no members or with no members entitled to vote on directors, a director may be removed by the affirmative vote of a majority of the directors in office present and voting at a meeting of the board in which a quorum is present. And we took the position that that section applies because, in this instance, the meeting in January 2017, the directors for which Eagle Forum sought to remove were not the at-large directors. So the membership had absolutely no right to vote on those directors.
But does that work, though? Because, I mean, the problem is some of the directors, I mean, there's at least one director, I believe, that the membership can actually vote on.
Correct. That's correct. And so, you know, we've taken the position that you look to the specific act that the corporation is attempting to affect. But even if that section doesn't apply, it doesn't matter because even under Section C, there's no requirement that directors be allowed to vote by proxy. In fact, that's directly contrary to another section of the same act, which is Section 108.05D, which very clearly states that no director may act by proxy on any matter. So looking towards the section upon which Mr. Schlafly relies, it states, in the case of a corporation with members entitled to vote for directors, no director may be removed except as follows. A director may be removed by the affirmative vote of 2/3 of the votes present and voted, either in person or by proxy. Now, this section doesn't mandate that the corporation allow voting by proxy. It's permissive. And given the outright prohibition under 808.05D, it simply doesn't apply to directors. Directors may not vote by proxy on any matter. And this is consistent with the rest of the statute. If you look to subsection 4, which Mr. Schlafly conspicuously avoids talking about, it states that if a director is elected by a class of voting members entitled to vote, directors or other electors, that director may be removed only by the same class of members entitled to vote, directors or electors, which elected the director. That's kind of a mouthful, but basically it says that if this director that you're seeking to remove is elected by the directors, then only that group of people, the director, can remove it. By contrast, if it's the at-large director, which at the time could be elected by a vote of the membership, only the membership can remove that director. So we were dealing with three directors that were elected by the board of directors. They could only be removed by directors, and those directors were not allowed to vote by proxy. So this subsection C4 shows you that there are some situations where proxy voting would not be prohibited, and that's when members are actually entitled to vote to remove the director, but that's not the case here. The other issue, there's another section that's relevant to the difference between how members are treated and how directors are treated, and that's 107.03F. It states that where the articles of incorporation or bylaws provide that a corporation shall have no members or, and this is the key part, where a corporation under its bylaws has no members entitled to vote on a matter, any provision of this act providing notice to the presence of or the vote, consent, or other action by members of the corporation shall be satisfied by notice to the presence of or the vote, consent, or other action of the directors of the corporation. So repeatedly, the statute treats directors and members differently, and it's completely consistent that the Illinois legislature would allow directors, allow members to vote by proxy, but not directors. The second issue with the proxy voting is mootness. There are two points here. First of all, the vote to remove Mr. Schlafly, there were only 9 members of the board at the time that he was removed. Three members, the three directors, the directors that were ousted, did not show up, did not vote. Remaining directors did vote, and the vote was 6-0, which satisfies the two-thirds threshold. So without regard to proxy voting, even if proxy voting was allowed, they still would have been removed. Perhaps more significantly, Mr. Schlafly's two-year term under the bylaws would have expired in September of 2017. So his claim is simply moot. We cite several cases in our briefs from other circuits where when the board of directors' term ends prior to the declaratory judgment or injunctive relief that's being sought, then there's nothing left for the court to do unless there's some sort of money damages claim, which there is not here. Turning quickly to the bylaws issue, again, our position, and the judge found it convincing, that Mr. Schlafly's failed to satisfy his burden of proof because he didn't state that the vote was not unanimous. And bylaws changes don't require notice under the Eagle Forum bylaws for unanimous action. It's only where the action is contested is notice required. The unanimous vote, and I'm reading from the bylaws, the unanimous vote of the board of directors or by the affirmative vote of two-thirds of all the directors then serving, provided notice of the proposed change is mailed to each director at least 10 days in advance of the meeting. So there's two parts there. You can change the bylaws by unanimous vote or by the affirmative vote of two-thirds if notice is mailed. And it really doesn't make sense to have these two different standards. Mr. Schlafly tries to argue that notice is required under both. Why would the statute require notice for unanimous and notice for two-thirds? There's a distinction there, and the distinction is, obviously, that notice is irrelevant if all of the members of the board are participating, and that was the case at the January 2017 meeting. And so our position is that under Twombly, Mr. Schlafly had to actually state the factual basis for why notice was inadequate of changing the bylaws. And because he doesn't allege that there was not unanimous action on the part of the board, his claim fails. The second issue we have as to the bylaws is the waiver issue. We cite Tolan versus Ashcroft, which this court has gone kind of a couple different ways with that. And as to the legal claim brought by Mr. Schlafly under the proxy voting, he may be correct that he has not waived by filing an amended petition. But the second issue, the bylaws issue, the court dismissed that because the court found that he didn't plead sufficient facts to show that he was actually injured or how he was injured by the changing of the bylaws. And when so that wasn't a legal deficiency, it was a factual deficiency. And he did not replead that case. In fact, that claim, in fact, he abandoned it in favor of a breach of fiduciary duty claim.
So I hear you on the first claim, the proxy voting, actually scaling back on your Tolan argument based on acuity. Is that the reason why you're doing it? Or?
I think that's accurate. I mean, obviously, the court and bank has not ruled on this issue. So,
right.
I mean, it's an open question. But I think we have a much stronger argument as to the bylaws change. And I don't think, frankly, we need Tolan on the proxy claim.
Okay.
I see that my time is up. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bousquet. Mr. Schlafly, your rebuttal.
Judge. So I allege multiple acts of misconduct by Eagle Forum in my petition. It's not just the procedure. I focused on the procedure on appeal because I think those are clear-cut examples. But I allege bad faith. I allege the membership is overwhelmingly opposed to what they're doing. And there are multiple allegations where I think I do state valid cause of action for a takeover. With respect to the proxy issue, though, the statute is clear that if the corporation has members, then it goes in and talks about these conditions about proxy voting must be allowed. It's when the corporation has members. It's not if the voter is a member. They could have said that. They could have said if the voting person is a member. Then they can vote by proxy. They didn't say that. If a corporation has members, and the reason is it gets confusing very fast if there are going to be different rules for allowing proxies for some people in a nonprofit group, but not for others. Sometimes it's allowed, sometimes it isn't. Directors, of course, are members too, and if they're voting, sometimes they can vote by proxy in an election. If it's one candidate, they can't vote by another. It gets confusing.
Isn't there some ambiguity here? Because the way I read the affirmative vote of 2/3 of the votes president voted is that it would apply when members are voting, but not necessarily when directors are voting. In other words, it's an acknowledgement that in some cases proxy voting is allowed.
Well, even Eagle Forum has interpreted it to be a 2/3 requirement. Now, they argue outside of the record to say they had 6 out of 9. That's not anywhere in the petition, so I urge you not to rely on that. But even they say that 2/3 requirement would be required to remove a director. Remember, we're removing directors here. It's like an impeachment. I mean, we want it to be hard. Illinois wants it to be difficult. In a membership corporation, they're supposed to be representing membership, and the basic disconnect here is they think the board can do whatever it wants. Just finally, on the bylaws, which I attached to my petition, if the grammar is clear, that notice must be provided, whether it's a unanimous vote of the directors who are present or a 2/3 vote of all directors. That's why there's a distinction there. It's unanimous of who's present, 2/3 of all directors. Notice must be required in all those situations. And they didn't do it.
Thank you, Mr. Shaffley.
Thank you, judges.
Thank you also, Mr. Bousquet. We appreciate your presence before the court this morning, the argument you've provided us, and we'll take the case under advisement. Madam Clerk.